Oh, I got distracted by internet bullshit. Bullshit. Internet bullshit.
It's probably a good week not to have much time to do interneting.
Hang on. I must record this podcast. Must is strong.
Must.
You do not need to record this bullshit.
It's funny how Zencaster really relies on a decent internet connection. When I was listening to the... sometimes it's okay, but yeah.
Well, it relies on your upload being decent.
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that.
I thought you'd spent lots of money on making it better.
Yeah.
I have, and it is a little bit better. It's, I wouldn't say it's good, though.
I would agree with that assessment.
Wow, that's going before the music. I would agree with that assessment on the Balls podcast.
You're just going to record me saying I will agree with that assessment and just drop it in like, you need one of those fucking Rodecaster soundboards.
I'm going to LeBron James is the greatest player that ever lived. I agree with that assessment.
I do actually agree with that assessment.
The doc's really formulaic these days. It's a dynamic duo, we'll be back again. Other rappers, DJ, you better pack it in. You're lacking sense, trying to tangle with us. Scoop of the big black boobies in the back of the bus. Just smacking you up and stealing your lunch. Money to search, money to feel just a touch. Only by the end of the day, that's understandable. What can I say? We got strong man. Mind, mind, mind,
Gary has absolutely no idea what has happened to it. Still doesn't know.
I've never quite seen why MJ not making it to as many finals is somehow a greater achievement than LeBron making it to dragging terrible teams to them and not winning.
Yeah, if you overachieve, is that it's funny how sports that have so in football, because it's not like there's not a final, there's not a final series, there's not an end goal, so you can't really, like, it's not like if you lose the last two games of the season in the Premier League, that makes any difference. You're either the champion or you're not. So does
unless it literally comes down to the last, 2011, 12 or something like that.
But do great club players sort of avoid that because there's no finals, or
I'd like to explain to you the situation around a certain Argentine dude called Lionel Messi, who is largely considered in his home country a choker and a failure because he's never managed to drag his underperforming national team in any of the single elimination finals games that they play in
over the line
in international football. So, yeah, there are definitely there's definitely finals games that matter. Yeah. It's just they're not necessary. And, of course, the European Cup, the Champions League.
So are you better off if to be seen as a great club player playing for a side like Japan or America where there's just absolutely no World Cup pressure and you're solely judged on your club performance? Are there many of those sort of players kicking around?
I can't think of anybody who's considered the best player in the world or in the conversation for that who's not...
Not a World Cup player as well.
Or not in a national team that has a chance to win something. I mean, Messi has made World Cup finals. Ronaldo has made European Championships finals and been injured and had his team win but have to stand on the sideline with crutches and shout performatively like a dickhead.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think back to the great players of the past who you could consider that. Brazilian Ronaldo, he won World Cups. George Weah, I suppose, is an example. He, Liberia never did fucking anything on the African stage. And, in fact, I think Weah's son is actually an American international because he grew up in the States. So he's also not going to amount to anything on the international football stage. Might win a CONCACAF tournament or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating.
Folks, is the Confederation of Central and North American Football Federations.
It's a fascinating thing how, like, perception and norms. Like, I think Luke is probably the best example we've got of it of it recently where if you were a rational basketball person and you weren't sort of steeped in that college basketball is the, you know, the second greatest competition in the world bullshit.
So, if you're not an American basketball fan, is what you're saying?
I think it's fair that there was a certain subset of American, a small one to be fair, subset of smart American basketball followers who are just like, this guy's going to be fucking awesome. He's playing in a really good league. He's done it at, you know, he's done it in those high pressure final situations. There's really no reason why he wouldn't be great. But the overwhelming sort of narrative of basketball, even with some of the players, I think, I think there was a whole-
Most of the players and most of the GMs.
Yeah.
Is that Europe equals Darko. Europe equals Frederick Weiss. Clippers point guard who constantly looked like he had a durry on the guy.
Teodosic. I was thinking of the guy that's, you know, who's not from Europe, he's from South America, but the guy that's 3 years away from being 3 years away, he's my...
Yeah.
He's actually
Brazilian.
Actually still in the league and doing okay as a bench player, but will never, ever be anything but the guy that was 3 years away from being 3 years away.
I think you've increased his years due to inflation, which is fair enough given the current economy. I think he was two years away from being 2 years away.
2 years away.
And now we're 2 years beyond the end of the 2 years away that he was going to be 2 years away from being.
But he's still in the league, so that as far as he's concerned, that's a win.
If you're drafting, you're just looking to – your best case is generally going to be a useful – rotation NBA player.
Yeah. I can't remember who someone wrote the article of like all the players that play, you know, one NBA minute and how many of them like there's a lot of players that average like three games or, you know, play a total of 62 minutes in their career, like a lot of those guys that play not very much at all, you know, and those 62 minutes might be over a 2-year rookie contract. It's just nuts how many, because we think of the Chris Pauls and the LeBron James and the Hardens that have been there forever and are just there season after season after season, but there's a whole bunch of them that just never, you know, never pop.
Well, the sort of people you're talking about, there's what, 5 of them in the world? 10 of them in the world?
Yeah.
Who get to be the, you know, the guys who get to be permanent starter on an NBA team.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only, what, 450 NBA players in the world every year? Not counting people who come up and down on two ways and so forth.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think about a third of them get rotated out every year. Like the ones on the fringes will leave and not return. Either because they're retired or because they drop out of the league or whatever.
And some of them go quick. Like, I can remember the Suns signed Josh Childress. And, like, that was widely regarded as a smart signing. And the next year, he was playing in the NBL. And it's like, fuck. That's from being hailed as a meaningful signing for an NBA. Like, the Suns back then were, that was the... I think the year that they just missed the finals, maybe, or maybe it was the last Gentry year. But they were not the sort of Gumby side they've been for quite a while. And it's just like, fuck, that just, he just fell off a cliff, just absolutely fell off a cliff,
out of the league.
Yep,
that's what happens.
So and you know, I guess some of them have decent careers in China and or Italy or Russia, but yeah, some of them just disappear and never to be seen again.
Yeah, disappear into their own demons, which is awfully sad when it happens. Did you see that story of Cappy Poindexter? I can't even say the fucking word. The former WNBA star who's gone rogue and clearly got some significant issues in her life. It's even tougher for WNBA players because they didn't have the huge bump in salary and the opportunity to live there, to build themselves a lifestyle to survive with.
Yeah.
So when they get, you know, the sport, the thing that they've lived for taken away from them, it's probably doubly traumatic to them.
The Nuggets are a pretty smart organization. I don't know if you knew that they'd sign, like, Sue Bird to the She's in the Front Office next year. Not a bad person to have that's won three out of the last four WNBA finals.
Yes. Do you get Rapinoe out of the deal, or does she not come with?
No. Well, they were all trying to convince her to not, not take the job, to come back for one more year. And I think she was like, have you seen the Nuggets? They're pretty handy. I can probably build a pretty decent second part of my career here.
I think we talked about this briefly when it happened.
I think she was there last off season, but because there's a weird thing.
Interning or something.
Well, no, there's a weird thing where if they're a WNBA player, they can go and work for a team, but they can't get paid at the full assistant rate.
Oh.
Because of the, because I guess they didn't want owners trying to circumvent the salary cap through front. You know, if you owned a WNBA and an NBA team, like you could probably pay more a WNBA player more as an assistant coach than you could for her.
It would be like third party payments in the NRL. It would be like how Easts signed their entire football club. But you would think that there should be an exception made for the Seattle Storm, who literally don't have a fucking. Their allied men's team got fucking kidnapped, put in a brown sack, and dragged across to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I don't believe there's any connection still between the Storm and the OKC Thunders. Although the names kind of match, don't they?
Yeah.
Actually match better now than they did when it was the Sonics.
Better
the
now
Storm.
Than they did before. Yeah. And then the other one was the Pelicans ex-GM. Going back into coaching, which I thought was a bit left field.
Del Debs.
Yeah, he's the third assistant on the Jazz bench now.
It would be more fun.
Yeah, probably would be a lot more fun than being the GM of the Pelicans and constantly having to scrape for fucking assets.
And it worked for Steve Kerr. And to be fair, I think a GM who's coached is actually a very useful skill set to have in your background.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives you that you're not just it's not just an abstract experience. It improves your player evaluation and player relationship management skills immensely. I would have thought
you should definitely be able to, like, I think he's in that player development area of the Jazz, and I actually think that's where the next I guess, edge that NBA teams are going to really try and find. You know, you want the next Lou Dort.
I remember him. He was famous for a week about 3 years ago.
It seems like that, doesn't it?
At least.
But I guess you want to hit on, even if you get a couple of games of that out of a non-draft pick, every couple of seasons, like, you know, you can probably, it's almost like futures trading, you know, it's just like, let's just hit, because if we hit one out of the park, it might change a final series. It didn't.
If you get a regular season Duncan Robinson, notwithstanding how he's performed, you know, in the finals, where he's felt the moment, I think it's fair to say.
Mm.
To be honest, he also felt the moment when he was invited to be in the All-Star three-point shooting competition. I wonder if it's just that he doesn't quite have the composure for the really, really, really big moments yet.
Yeah.
And that'll come to him with experience, whereas Tyler Hero very definitely does, because he was born with a ridiculous amount of swag for somebody who's from fucking Wisconsin.
The thing with him, though, is he'll probably get better too. Like, the swag won't change, but just the muscle memory and the that feeling of, you know, I'm trying to drum it into my players that we have 4 years to try and build the feeling of playing those really high level games, because you just don't get that playing sort of, you know, college. You don't get it playing college, and you probably don't get it playing the day in, day out NBA games either. Like,
Duncan Robinson was a bench player for Michigan. I mean, Michigan are a decently high profile basketball team. But he was, like, at the end of the fucking bench for that Michigan team.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he had had any of those really big moments playing for them. I think he transferred there from a smaller college. So it's kind of this is his first really big moment.
Yep. Yeah.
I suppose we better address the finals, although the finals will be probably cooked by the time this podcast records. Tomorrow afternoon, the game five is being played, and we can't physically turn around this podcast soon enough to have this out before that game gets things. So it may be Lakers in five by then. If not, it'll probably be Lakers in five before Monday Night Football kicks off on ESPN. So that's probably it from the Heat. They turned up. They got crueled by unlucky injuries. It's a shame that that's kind of how it's worked out. But in a way, that means the Heat can go away thinking, you know, we could have had them but for the injuries, and the Lakers can go away, you know, comfortable knowing that they won. And LeBron can have that chip, and LeBron can keep telling everybody that he doesn't care about his on-court legacy because his off-court legacy is more important. Well, that on-court legacy is still important as shit.
Yeah. It's almost unfair having Anthony Davis as LeBron's second best player.
Well, it is fair, but only because they traded literally every other competent basketball player within a 50-mile radius of the Lakers training facility, including guys that they tried to trade half the Clippers, even though they weren't aligned to the team. Which is why that was a ridiculous take by somebody saying that, you know, that what AD did was exactly the same as what KD did. He let, you know, he just left them high and dry, left the Pelicans high and dry. And I'm like, and it was like, it was Duncan Smith who made the point, like, I reckon you need to look at your definition of high and dry.
Yeah.
Because there was, the Pelicans got an awful fucking lot for Anthony Davis.
And they got enough, a little bit like, the Thunder, that they can either package it and trade it for something that's a sure, or, you know, that they're going to turn into a sure thing in terms of, because they've got the foundational piece. They then need to leverage all those picks into complementary pieces to put around their foundational piece. All right. Even though it looks like Davis is going to be really good, and then the Lakers are going to be fairly high up in the standings, that those picks are probably going to be, you know, 16, 17, 18. But enough of, you get enough of them, you'll get something to put around, you know, who they've got, and away you'll go.
And like we said the other week, there's plenty of quality value there in the mid-teens.
Yes.
And that's partly because better teams tend to draft there and they've got better player evaluation and development skills. But there's still, you know, the difference in talent between the guy who gets drafted 8th and the guy who gets drafted 16th is not so high. It's probably just that he got better publicity because he was on a higher profile college team.
Mm.
And we've seen that over and over and over again.
I think there's years where having the one or the two, you know, obviously if you're in the Durant draft, you'd like to have the Zion draft. You'd like to have one of those top picks. But, like, does anyone really think Golden State want to hold on to the number two pick this year? It seems like a bit of a crapshoot.
Yeah. And when was the last time they actually put effort into understanding the draft? When was the last time they drafted?
Mm.
I mean, they've been reasonably good at it when they've done it, but they haven't actually had to do it for a very long time. They haven't had to draft for a key piece for a while. They've been able to draft for end-of-the-bench guys.
Yeah. The thing is, though, that they're not going to take on huge amounts of salary because who knows when that very expensive stadium will ever have paying customers in it again.
Yeah, but that's a problem the entire NBA has. They're all facing that. And it's almost like they're not going to come back. They're not going to bring the league back until that shit in the White House settles itself down and they have a situation where the virus has got itself under control, which is never. Yeah. I mean, America's never getting that shit together. On either count, I think.
I did see someone on Twitter say today, this virus would all be over if we just learned better hygiene. And I'm like, I'm not sure that's how it works. I'm sure that helps, but I don't think it just goes away if you magically wash your hands more.
I mean, it does. I mean, it literally does. But you have to, the idea of washing your hands more suggests that you also dedicate yourself to the idea of a hygienic behavior, like staying home when you're sick.
All the time.
Not coughing on people.
All the time.
Or Or just, it doesn't take that long. Just the couple of fucking weeks to months that it takes to stop the thing from propagating through the system.
See, you're fighting to...
Which is never happening in America because freedoms.
Yeah, but even in Australia, like, you're fighting against two...
Well, Australia is America. Let's be fucking real.
Two clashing cultures, because I reckon my work's done about as good as anyone in terms of the hygiene, you know, don't come in when you're sick, segregation of workforce, you know, so you can't sort of cross-contaminate, all that shit. But the minute things sort of went back to normal a bit, one of the guys in the office came in, you know, he was obviously had a cold. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I really need to get some, go the fuck home. Get out of here. Do not come in here. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200.
It's too late by then, because this thing, yeah, I mean, that right. particular the virus passes done. On really well when you're asymptomatic.
Yeah.
Once you're symptomatic, it's already game over.
Yeah.
You've already done the damage you were going to do.
Mm.
But that's the problem. Whenever you work for a company that, and this is not a criticism of your company, but whenever you work for a company that you know, you, particularly a smaller company where you know that your labor makes a material difference to the bottom line. If you're working for a, you know, a big super corporation, you know that you can fuck off and, you know, you take a day off, you take a week off, it's not going to make that much fucking difference.
You're,
I mean, you'll get behind with your work.
You're a speck in the machine.
But if you're in a smaller company whereby you're not being there, something will not work. Mm. Something will fall over and people you know and like, or at least know and get paid by, will not be able to make bank. There's a pressure there to turn up.
Yeah, we had four of those pieces away this week, and whoa, yeah, things were a bit hectic, you could say.
Well, you didn't miss anything by not watching any basketball. That's
funny. Yeah, that's
you
true.
You missed the Jimmy Butler game that was nice to see, and we were hoping to see, but you know, for it to be Lakers in five, there has to be one win by the Heat. And I think that was it.
Hmm. Yeah, gentlemen, it's good to see.
Although I should say that, you know, everything we said about the EPL last week turned out to be absolutely incorrect within about 6 hours. So I'm expecting the Heat to rally and win it in seven now.
The my dour, you know, eke out a draw side, you know, struck again. That's just what I wanted to see. So it was a nil all draw or one all draw?
I can tell that you didn't actually watch the game.
I did not. I don't have Premier League, so
the Leeds Man United Man City game was renowned as being one of the great heavyweight battles of tactics and end to end chaotic football. Just it was exactly what you'd want a Bielsa versus Guardiola game to be, and Leeds were incredibly brave and incredibly ballsy, and probably deserved to win it. But 1-1 is probably fair enough result. But it was an insane week in the fucking Premier League.
Did I see Man United get smacked like 5-1 or something?
Worse. Literally, we said like last week, like we're talking about how well Leicester were going. Leicester went on to lose 3-0 to West Ham. And we were saying how, you know, no one was going to catch Liverpool. And Liverpool went to Aston Villa and lost 7-2.
Yeah, I did see that. I've got a few people that don't like Liverpool on my Facebook feed, and there was a bit of I'm a very happy person this week.
I reckon football has the most of that. The anti-fan of anyone but. There's more people who are emotionally invested, and I think it's a very British trait, and it's a very sad trait, really. But it's like the people who are more interested in seeing anybody but that team win, particularly like a Man United or a Liverpool, than to have their own team win. It's kind of a very British misery.
I was a bit like
having
that
said with- that. I feel exactly like that for United, Bayern Munich, Juventus, particularly, so on and so forth. Real Madrid. But yeah, 7-2. The thing is, Liverpool have got, like, they've conceded more goals in the first four games of the year than they did in the entire first quarter of the season last year. Part of it's shit luck. I mean, they've conceded 11 goals in four games. 10 of them were in two games, the Leeds game and the Villa game, both to teams that should be down the bottom of the league. But it's been on about just a bit over 5 expected goals. Like the XG on all the shots they've conceded across those 4 games is about 5. I think I read it was 5.2. So they've been unlucky. This is like playing against an outside shooting basketball team that just happens to nail all their shots. Like that the Lakers and the Heat in game 1 of the finals. The Lakers blew them out because they were just had a really, really hot night from shooting from outside. And that's kind of what Aston Villa did. But they should have won 3-2 or 4-2 at least. But running up the score was a bit of a little bit odd.
Yeah. It sort of feels like, if did the Jazz spank the Nuggets the first 2 games, I think? Like the Nuggets just looked all over the shop.
Yeah, the Nuggets looked out of it. I mean, notoriously, the Nuggets came back from 3-1 down, but they did not look close in the first 2.
No, they just looked like Jokic was ready to go and sit in the beach and drink, whatever Serbian drink he wanted to drink. It just didn't look like he was interested in all.
It's been said before, but he looked like a stale loaf of bread floating in a fucking sewer, just circling a drain. He just did not look like he just sort of bloated and floating around the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, you were right. Man United lost 6-1 to Jose Mourinho's Spurs. And, of course, Jose was the former coach of Man United and didn't particularly enjoy it that much, I'm sure. Not to completely fucking annihilate the club that fired him.
How have United sort of – like, United is a very Brisbane Broncos situation, isn't it, where they just were dominant for so long.
Yeah, I mean, United are still the biggest football club in the world in terms of their revenue, in terms of their profile. Whenever you do like Q score style stuff, whenever you look like The Athletic had a big thing where they looked at, who is the quote unquote biggest club in British football. And they looked at, TV ratings and shirt sales and number of fans and, social media impressions, as well as on, number of trophies and prize money won and all that sort of stuff. And Man United are so far above the next team in line. It's not even close because they've got that, the Alex Ferguson history. But they've just pissed it away so much. And the biggest problem, apart from hiring coaches, not empowering them and then firing them, is that they don't have a front office worth the name. Their GM, for want of a better word, is commercial guy, Ed Woodward. Not the equaliser, not the old British actor. Although you might as well get the old British actor involved. But, he's a commercial guy. He's not really a football guy. So their football operations department is pretty shambolic, and they just make a lot of – they've made a lot of bad fucking decisions. And one of them was putting Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who's a very mediocre manager, but a bit kind of a quasi-club legend, not one of the highest-profile members of that sort of 90 squad, the class of 92, because he wasn't part of the class of 92, but he was a member of that squad. He scored one of the winning goals in the Champions League win of 98-99. He's a nice guy and he presents well and all that sort of stuff, but he's not that good a manager, and that's kind of a problem. And they're kind of a competent Europa League chasing kind of side, so sort of a 6th to 8th kind of position side, but that's not what you should be when you've got the resources of the biggest club in the world behind you.
Yeah, the guy who was my assistant coach at World Cup had this saying that he kept repeating, and it's one of those cliches that's actually true, and he would always say, you have to build your culture every day. Like you can't sit back and just assume. And, like, culture is a funny word because a lot of people think of it like, a bit of team building, going out on the piss and having a beer or
bonding.
Or, you all go out to dinner. But culture's not just the players all getting along. Culture is your front office and your coaching staff and your players all being pushing in the same direction for the same thing. It's the whole everything.
It's an organisational structure more than a workplace feelings kind of situation.
Yeah. And Man United just seem like the classic, and the Broncos just seem like that classic, we've been good for so long that we should just be good. And when it doesn't happen, it just...
Yeah. We were great in the 90s and we're going to keep doing what made us great in the 90s.
Yeah.
Arsenal were sort of subject to that as well because they were under Arsene Wenger for so long, and Wenger genuinely revolutionised English football by bringing in stuff that now seems ridiculous, into like, you know, getting people to eat salads instead of having fucking a full English when they turn up for training, and getting them to lay off the piss and all that sort of stuff. But by 2015, he's not having the same impact that he did in 1996 with those kinds of, his inventive steps had been adopted by everybody else.
Mm.
And all of a sudden he wasn't really cutting it in terms of the intellectual contribution anymore.
Yeah, it does make those Spurs, Patriots runs really... like, I wonder whether someone at the Spurs or the Patriots is studying Man United, because it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? Once Ferguson went, now...
Well, they've got the next to study, so they don't need to... They've got their own version.
But do you know what I mean? Like, did front office guys retire at the same time as Ferguson, or was he sort of... Was his fingerprints over the front office as well as the
well, they never coaching? Had a front office in the same sort of context in English football. I mean, Ferguson was the director of football, effectively. He ran the transfer campaign. There were people who, that's what I mean when I say Ed Woodward is the commercial manager, because generally it was the stuff that Fergie didn't do was the commercial management. It was the organising the sponsorships. It was the, organising the off-season tours. It was the, getting stadium extensions, that sort of stuff. That's the stuff that Fergie didn't do. But Fergie, and it is very much the style in English football for the head coach to be a manager. They always call it the manager in English football. They never call it the head coach. In European football, they often call him the head coach, because there is a director of football who handles all of the comings and goings in terms of the club roster. And the head coach doesn't necessarily have a say at all.
Control, yeah.
Yeah. It's much more like an American head coach GM kind of model in European football compared to English football. But the English football situation has changed over the years. At a place like Chelsea, you see much more of a European-style model where, Frank Lampard or before him, Maurizio Sarri or an Antonio Conte would have pissed and moaned about the fact that they couldn't necessarily get the players they wanted, but they were expected to go out and win with the players they were given rather than telling the front office to go and get me that specific player.
Well, and I'm sure those front offices were like, well, you're not going to get Messi, but we're going to give you a guy that's 75% of Messi, but that will play, you want this sort of player, we're going to give you this sort of player.
Yeah.
But just not the really-
You
want
a player with this particular kind of look, in analytically, that he can, is it passer, dribbler, or, good at winning the ball, or good at possession, or good at chasing turnovers, or whatever it is that you're actually specifically looking for. But even that part of the dialogue is relatively recent to soccer.
Yeah, right.
To be able to sort of say, okay, you know those kind of spider plots that if you look at somewhere like StatsBomb or Opta, they often have those spider plots that are kind of – that sort of graph how good they are in various dimensions.
Who was it? Was it it might have been Wheatman put me on to a guy that's doing that for rugby league.
Yes,
With a, whole bunch of sort of, like – that there'll be a game and it'll be like a head-to-head sort of halfback battle, and everyone will go off on the halfback, and he'll sort of break it down, break down the key elements of that halfback's game and go, well, this halfback never does that, and it's a bit unrealistic to expect him to all of a sudden be, the best field kicker in the game when his – his strength is passing at the line sort of thing, and lays out the whole sort of strengths and weaknesses of this person's game and compares it to, six or seven other halfbacks and, basically says, if you wanted that, they basically needed this sort of player if they wanted to play that sort of game. It's interesting because we've always said that the discussion and the journalism around a sport almost pushes the coaching and the innovation in the actual sport ahead.
Yeah.
And this is the first time I'm starting to see that basketball, I hate the word analytics because I think it has a certain connotation now, but
that's breaking, what it is. It's exactly that.
It's analysing the game.
It's an exciting
game,
moment for rugby league journalism and rugby league fandom in that you can see that shit starting to develop. You can see It's going to try and elbow its way to the mainstream, and it'll get pushback from fucking Neanderthals and dinosaurs who are going, man, just fucking run hard. No one's ever won a footy game with a computer. You know, that kind of moronic fucking Neanderthality. But there's going to be – you can win football games with running straight and also knowing who to run at straight and who to give the ball to run straight, because they're better at running straight than trying to do sneaky offloads, you know, Blocker Roach 1989 style.
Yeah. There will be a jump. Like, absolutely. Someone will pick that rugby league guy out, and all of a sudden he'll be, you know, the Hollinger. He'll just disappear from Twitter, and his graphs and his little pretty images and stuff just won't be there anymore. And everyone will go, oh, I wonder where that guy went. And it'll, you know, you'll find out he's working for the Roosters or Melbourne or, you know, someone that will throw a heap of money at him.
Probably already is working for Melbourne. I mean, if there was ever a club that was likely to have that stuff already nailed down, it would be Melbourne. And and if there was ever a club that definitely wouldn't have that stuff nailed down, it would be the Brisbane Broncos, because it's still 1997.
Yeah, that's right.
At Red Hill.
Well, they've gone back to Kevy. It's.
Well, they've gone back to Kevy with the hope that will somehow entice. It's a bit like the Underpants Domes. It's like Kevin Walters, Underpants, ? Craig Bellamy and Cam Smith, Prophet? ? You know, it's very. I don't know what the fuck's going on. And if all you end up with at the end of all this is Kevin Walters, then who was basically a guy standing outside the Broncos headquarters for the last 5 years with a big sign saying, pick me. Good luck to you.
Yeah, and then, look, I don't follow rugby league enough, but I don't understand. But then they fired Walters as Queensland coach and made Bennett the Queensland coach, but Bennett's also a club coach? I don't quite...
I think the Broncos said it wasn't so much that they got fired from Queensland, but I think the Broncos said, oh, we expect you to put your full attention on this. Whereas South are like, it's
do whatever
it's
you like.
After the season, we don't give a fuck. You know, whatever makes you happy, old man.
We've got PR battles to fight.
We've got bigger problems than this, eh?
We've got
former players with long rap sheets, allegedly. This is the gift of the Keith Merrow just throwing out allegedly.
We need that on the soundboard as well.
Yes. But just
every time we say something unsubstantiated, I'll just put allegedly.
Allegedly, Sam Burgess is a piece of human shit, which is a shame, mostly for him and the people around him. But to a lesser extent, also for South City and their supporters, of which I am one. But the bigger tragedy by far is that he's a human piece of shit for the humans who have to live with him.
Yeah. On that positive note, because we you know, have to stick with our...
We can get out of this. By the time this broadcast, we'll know whether the milk beat the Dirty Easts. I do love how I don't know whether I'm just on a particular corner of Twitter that picks us up, but there's a whole lot of up the milk and up the Mighty Green Machine and up the rugby league in my timeline right now.
I just like
the game has only just kicked off as we say it. So the people's team might be going home on their ass, but we can only hope that they get a bit of that kind of 60-8 style. That was the one thing I did like about that. I liked everything about South beating East 60-8. But my favourite part was the social media from City Rail. I was saying, we've got a lot of South fans here, so just for tonight, we're going to. There's not going to be any 7 o'clock announcements. We're going to rename 7 o'clock 60-8.
That's not bad. I just like how much
the 60-8 train to Milperra.
How much calling a team the Milk infuriates some very traditional rugby league people.
It's the milk. Up the milk. They haven't been sponsored by milk since fucking 1994.
poor old Hugh.
But everyone knows who they mean. I mean,
you're always like, why don't they call them the Chinese team? We pay a lot of money for that sponsorship.
It's all fucking espionage. Who gives a shit?
I do like that a Chinese telecommunications company that would be seen very suspiciously in Canberra is the Canberra sponsors. I quite like that.
They're also the sponsor of the Wellington Phoenix. So the sponsor, I mean, this is a deliberate strategy, obviously. Mm. The sponsor, they think that by sponsoring the football club in the national team, that'll make any fucking difference. It makes no fucking difference to Hearts and Minds at all. They're still not being allowed to build a 5G network here.
I thought they might have just-
or in Australia.
That they might have a sponsorship attaché at the club, you know. I'm just popping off in my all black wetsuit to do a bit of sponsorship liaison. Catch you later, boys.
<Da-da-da-da>. What's that music?
James Bond.
Well, they play the James Bond theme every time you walk around, dickhead. It's like, I'm just a big fan. I can't wait for whatever the next one's called. No Time for Another Tomorrow to Die. I'm dying again tomorrow. You can see I'm really enthusiastic about the new Bond film.
All right, Doc, let's come back and talk some tunes.
And that's the sort of content that belongs on the Tripping Bulls side of the podcast. This was the Bulls podcast. Up the milk and up rugby league.
See ya. All right, I'm going to go get a whiskey.
I would agree with that assessment.